Welcome to Coon Hunting University Podcast. This is your host, Mason Bush. Class is now in session.
Hunting season is here. Make sure your dog stays energized with Joy High Energy 2420. This beef formula is made to meet the nutritional needs of the hardest working dogs at a whopping 505 kcals per cup. Joy High Energy is formulated with omega 3 and 6 fatty acids for healthy skin and a great coat. Added pumpkin for digestive health and chelated minerals for more energy. So whether they're in the woods, the water, or the field, make sure they have the fuel for anything that comes their way. To learn more about Joy High Energy 2420 or to find a dealer near you, visit joydogfood.com or call us at 800-245-4125.
Welcome to Coon Hunting University Podcast. This is your host, Mason Bush. Today I have Trip Akins on. How you doing, Trip?
I'm doing pretty good. How we doing?
Doing good. Sitting here watching it rain. It seems like it hadn't quit in days, and I think it's going to keep raining for the next couple of days. I don't know what it's like out there, but...
Well, we're glad to have it. We haven't had any rain. We actually just started getting rain here a couple of hours ago, and we've been missing it all. So we'll take all of it we can get up our way.
It's mostly flooded where I'm at, so you can have some of this.
Hey, there you go.
Well, Tripp, let all the fans know who you are and what you do, and then we'll kind of go from there.
All right. Well, I'm a veterinarian, first of all. So I'm kind of a mixed animal practitioner here in southern Missouri, in the West Plains area. And I also do cattle farming, beef cattle. I've really just farm life in general. I mean, that's kind of my deal, farming and hunting. And so I've been farming for 20, oh, since I was a kid. I was around the farm since a teenager for sure. Started with my show animals as a kid and FFA and stuff. And then we moved, that was in West Virginia, actually. And then we moved to Missouri here, about 20 years ago. And I farmed, and we have a cow-calf operation here, a pretty big operation, for what we came from. About 300 pairs. Did that for years and decided one day, I deer hunted and squirrel hunted and everything else, a little bit of turkey hunting. And then I was kind of trying to figure out what I could do to make more time in the day. So I was like, well, I might start coon hunting a little bit. And so that was, that was back in, I think I really started in 08. I think that's about when I really started. And just had some just dogs, just started getting some stuff. And dad got an old Walker female and hunted her a little bit. And she was an old rat attack female. And I actually had a red bone hound and I got a puppy, another puppy. And I kind of ordered one. And the folks told me about competition hunting, and they said, we only sell our puppies to competition hunters. And I didn't even know what that was at the time. So I was, we turned the dogs loose, went trade, season, we knock it out and skin it. And so I was like, well, I don't know anything about it, but I'd be willing to try it. And started going to some hunts, and I just had a blast right off the rip. I got lucky and just drew some good casts and people that I guess were they just had fun doing it, and there wasn't a bunch of arguing and stuff, and so, you know, I was like, oh, this is fun, and just later on got some more dogs, and me and Dad got a female together. It was Valley Creek Shock is who it was, and started hunting her. She was qualified for the UKC World and qualified for PKC Nationals and just all kinds of good stuff. And so that was kind of my first big run at any kind of real competition hunting. And hunted her and kind of traveled around. And so I know I went up to the world qualifier up in, I think it was Aurora, Missouri. And it was kind of big to me because I drew a bunch of, I don't know, the cast had several big dogs in it. And we all got beat that night. I mean, you know, it was a dead cast, but again, just had a blast. I had went over to, I think it was Patterson, Missouri, and it might have been the weekend before that qualifier, to a PKC hunt, and that's where I met Eric Henry and a bunch of them guys from over there, and they kind of just showed me what it was like, something different than what I had hunted. I'd only been in a UKC hunt, and they just kind of showed me how that went, and they made it fun. And so, you know, my experience has been all good up to that point. And I don't know, even for the most part throughout all of my hunting, I guess. But, you know, it was just kind of a blast, and it just progressed from there. And I competition hunted more, and you know, I ended up judging some at some pro hunts, and was on the panel at the Final Four of the PKC World Hunt there. I don't remember what year it was, to be honest with you. I think Brendan Tony was on that cast, maybe with
Ryan. Was Ryan Croson in the finals?
Maybe. I think he was, actually. I think so.
I think it would have been the year that he won it with D.
That might be right. I know. I've hunted with them during that period of time. I was hunting with so many, I can't keep it straight, and I've slept a lot of different nights since then. So
I'll say about 2014, I believe, is when he won it.
Okay,
so that'd be 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
So, well, how you and I come together, is Pete. And, you know, I mean, you was just talking before we come on here that he just passed away, 13 years old, or just coming 13. So I don't know. I've never really just got to pick your brain about him as much as I wanted to. So you tell us a little bit about him, where he come about, and just some of the highlights that you remember with him.
Well, I tell you, that was another one of those I was looking for, and I was looking for a dog because I had several dogs throughout there, throughout this time. But really up to, I think really before Pete, that Valley Creek Shock dog was probably, I don't know what I would consider the best dog overall, until she kind of started having some problems. And I took her to some vets, actually a couple of different vets, spent lots of money, tried to figure out what the heck was wrong with her, and got disgusted because I couldn't figure out what was going on. And so I was looking for another dog, and I tried several young ones, and I started kind of calling around everywhere looking for a dog. And Harry Watkins had Pete at the time, and I ended up, I actually went and tried several dogs all over everywhere, drove a lot of hours, tried several, and then I talked to Harry. He had described him to me, and he told me all about him. You know, he was the crazy, hard hunting, you know, has a coon most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, And, don't cut him loose unless you really want to be hunting hard and deep. And I was like, well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. And I was like, because I can't stand a dog that won't go hunting. That is one of the things that if I have to go out there and walk it around through the woods to the coons, I just as well go out there and bark myself and put the thing up. So, yeah, I ended up meeting him, and I didn't hunt with him or anything. I was like, and I didn't know Harry, but everybody said, if he tells you something, it's pretty well going to be the truth. And so I went and met him. Oh, I think in Ohio or something. I can't remember for sure. I went over somewhere, met him, picked him up, brought Pete home, and that first night, I was tired from all the driving and stuff, and I don't remember what we were doing. But the next night, I went with some of the guys I hunted with. I was like, so I got me a new dog. Do you want to go hunting? And they're like, you really did? Yeah. I was like, well, come on, let's go. So it was hot. I do know it was hot time of year because we tied the dogs to a cable in the back of the truck instead of putting them in the box. And we went and cut them loose in a place I wasn't familiar with. And the first thing I remember is there were two blue ticks and him in the back, a male, a female, and him. And all we could hear was clanking on the back of the window, and he was up there just going at it with that daggone blue tick female. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. And so I was like, she's not even supposed to be in heat. And, I was like, I don't know what's going on. And so we took them over there, got them out. They were fine. We weren't fighting or anything, but, and we cut them loose, and then they split three different directions and were gone. And so we kind of heard their dogs running and running and running and never were getting treed. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh my golly, look down, and old Pete was like, oh, I don't know. He was a little over a mile in there, and I could hear him open a little bit, and I was like, well, we must be on a hilltop or something, and no, we weren't. And all of a sudden, bam, he comes treed. So I go trucking off to that. So I'm gonna just walk to him. Cause I don't know how he does, and I was like, I don't even know where he's at. And they took the truck, and everybody else went another direction to try to go gather the other dogs from the highway. And he ended up treeing somebody's backyard, and it was I'll never forget it though, because I made it so far over there. Then there was a creek that was too deep for me to cross. And so I'm trying to get a hold of them. I go back to the road, and they come back, and I had noticed that wherever they went to, Pete had went was in the truck. And they come back and they said, "Oh, you're not gonna believe this. He was up there in this guy's yard, and he was so mad, and he had him old had him a house cat treat over there." Well, I was beside myself at this point because, I didn't spend a big old, which was, I don't know, a good amount of money. And I'm sitting there going, this guy's probably done stuck it to me, And then, later on, they let me go with that for about an hour. And then finally they were like, no, we're just kidding. He was treed up some den tree by in somebody's backyard, and everything was fine. But from that there on, I mean, he did fine. I mean, he worked with where we're hunting, and he made a lot of people mad over the years because anytime, I mean, and everybody hated walking to him. Oh man. And he would make you walk. I mean, you get to the end of a cast and there'd be 5 minutes or less. If he could win it in that 5 minutes, I mean, I was listening hard, and he's won a ton of cast in the last 5 minutes. Just slide off in there, a mile and a half or more sometimes.
Toting at a
And
100 strike.
oh yeah, he always, he always seemed to get out there away from you enough, but you knew, I mean, everybody that hunted with him knew, you know, he was just, I don't know. He knew how far to get out there before he got it started. So, but yeah, he was, I mean, we had a love hate relationship, but you know, I'd love to have another one like him, because even though he was frustrating a lot of nights, you know, he did make it fun when it come time to go to a hunt, to at least make you feel like you got a chance. So,
right. Hey guys, next time you're in the market for some new hunting supplies, head on over to Conkey's Outdoors. Whether it's a light, boots, dog leash, Garmin, or any other kind of hunting accessories, they can take care of you. Conkey's is a family-owned business that strives on excellent customer service and guarantees fast delivery every time. The next time you're over in Hastings, Florida, stop by or give them a call at 904-692-1568. Thanks. I know I've been trying to chase you down for what seems like months. I guess it has been months.
It has been.
I always wanted you to get on here and us talk about just some things that we see on the daily as dog men. This is springtime, so I'd like to talk a little bit about allergies and tick-borne diseases and maybe a little others. So,
well. Yeah, and some things that kind of can roll back to with the dogs, with just a couple that I've talked about so far, like Shock, I finally figured out her problem. It took me some time. It actually was more of the reason I decided to go to vet school, was I finally ended up finding out she had hypothyroidism. And in addition to that, she had Ehrlichia. She got Ehrlichia, so she had the old tick-borne stuff that everybody dreads. And so we got her straightened out with doxy. We got her straightened out with thyroxin, and she turned back around and was a pretty good dog. And so I mentioned that just kind of to talk about some of the tick-borne illnesses, and being springtime, you know, for us, it's even a year-round thing, but it's worse when you hit spring and summer, fall, you know, when the ticks are out. But the worst part about it is, you know, everybody thinks, you know, even if they get some flea and tick control or whatever, that their dogs can't get tick-borne stuff. Well, that's not true. So that's a big myth that you know, it helps prevent it, you know, if you cut down on the amount of times you're getting bit by something that can make you sick with it, definitely, you know, it's gonna improve your odds of keeping from getting it. But I mean, that to me, that one's a big one. And I tried to get the vet school to do this study for me, and they said it would cost too much money and take too many years. But there is some kind of correlation from what, I mean, I've kind of a little bit kept some records and talked to other vets and in the areas of the kind of southern region. And there is some kind of correlation of having Ehrlichia and developing some of the thyroid issues that we see. And I don't have any studies, because like I say, nobody wants to fork up the money or the time to do it. But that's kind of it's an area that I wish they would study. And as houndsmen, you know, we notice it more than somebody who has a house dog that, you know, they might get some of this stuff. They wouldn't notice, you know, nearly the effects of it as somebody who is out in the woods pushing the dog and watching them. You know, a lot of folks think just because you take them out and and run them in the woods and stuff that they're just, that you don't care about them or all that good stuff. But, you know, the houndsmen, they know a lot more about their dogs and probably care for them a lot better than a lot of pets get cared for.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, that's that. I mean, that one to me, that's kind of a, that's a big topic of the, all of the hot time, but really, you know, and folks don't realize that the effects of the tick-borne illnesses. I go to Ehrlichia because that's just the one we see the most. I mean, you know, we can get Lyme, Rocky Mountain spotted fever somewhat. We don't see as much of it here. And then anaplasmosis is the other, you know, the other one that we see. And then you can easily get tested for those. If you go get a 4DX snap test by IDEX, you know, most vets, that's what they use now. It tests for your heartworms. It tests for Ehrlichia, Lyme, and anaplasm all in one test, and takes like 8 minutes to run. So it's something where you can find out the results. And if you've got a problem, you can get those dogs on doxy and probably help get them turned around. One thing I will add to that, though, is a lot of folks want to, they don't want to give their dogs a break. When they get this stuff, you know, they think, well, we can get some medicine in them for a couple of days, and then let's go back to hammering them in the woods. They really need to give them a break. You know, they need to give them preferably that month off. It's because it's 30 days of doxy. You know, anybody that's, I mean, had it knows that, but anybody that's curious about it, you know, it's 30 days and, you know, it's 30 days for a reason. It takes that long to really do its job. And so, you know, their body's worn down. Their joints or muscles are sore. They get overheated. I mean, that's some things you're going to see. You know, they don't feel good in general. And, you know, it's one of the things that if your dog's off, you know, and it's hot and you think they're acting overheated or they seem kind of stoved up or, you know, that it is something worth checking on, for sure.
What about I know I've heard it both ways that Ehrlichia can flare up. Is that true?
Yes, that is something that we see, and that's not just in working dogs. We see that even in the house dogs. You know, some dogs have to go on their doxy, you know, like for a week or two at a time every month because they're just chronic offenders with it. And you'll see vets prescribe it different ways based off of, you know, what they've learned and what literature and stuff they read. And I prefer a twice a day doxycycline for the 30 days. It works better. I feel like the literature is out there for the twice a day being more effective than trying to give it once a day. And you know, I feel like I see less flare ups. Not going to say they don't happen. You know, it's just part of it. But there is another thing, you know, that I mean, most people are told about it, but some aren't. And that's when you have to give the doxy for it. Don't give dairy products. I know, you know, there's a time period, you know, so many hours before and after, but really, if you just avoid dairy products while they're taking it, it's going to be more effective. That kind of, it just binds up the medication and they basically just poop out a big portion of the effective dose. So, you know, that's some things that if they're not being told, you know, It's the little things that kind of add up to making it successful or a failure in your treatment. And, you know, nothing's 100%, but if we're going to do it, we might as well try to get the most out of it.
Right. I know many you've talked about before that they're pretty close to having a vaccine for Ehrlichia. Have you got any update on it?
I don't have any update yet. No, the companies, you know, they only like to trickle out information the closer they get to getting that FDA license. And I hope they do. I mean, everybody keeps saying it's coming. And I really hope for at least the southern half, you know, really anybody that's traveling to hunt anywhere with the ticks, you know, to get it if it proves to be effective. But I don't have any insight. You know, we're kind of we're left in the dark on some of that stuff, just like everybody, until the drug companies think they can get some money. You know, they don't like to give us any kind of heads up.
Right. It seems like about 10 or 12 years ago that you didn't really hear about Ehrlichia. Do you think it's something that's probably been going on for years on years and we just didn't know about it?
I think so. I think it's been going on for quite a long time. I do think that it's gotten worse. We've noticed, and this is a big debate. You know, we have this in the vet community. We have it in the farming community. You know, are the diseases getting worse? Are we testing for it more? Is that, you know, is it just people are willing to test more now? I don't know, but it does seem like, you know, for us at the clinic, I would say a single day does not go by that we're in the office that we don't have at least one to two Ehrlichia positive tests, and that's just in our dogs in general. Now, you know, I think partially that I want to say that that's probably because we're testing for it with that 4DX test, where we used to test for heartworms alone when we do a heartworm check. Well, now we're testing for all this stuff. You know, we see it more. But I do think that it has gotten worse, and the ticks have become, I don't know, I mean, not mutant, but I think they've kind of overpopulated themselves. And, you know, I don't know about where you all are at and where, you know, everybody that's listening, but I do know that, like, our deer population is ridiculous here.
Mm-hmm.
And so through the winter time, you know, if you end up, you know, if you deer hunt or whatever, if you end up shooting a deer or something, they're loaded with ticks all winter long, even through the coldest time. So the transmission of these diseases is constant. And so they have such a, you know, their kind of intermediate host, you know, is available all the time. And the more of them you put together, you know, it's just more of a breeding pool. And then, you know, they just seed the area with more. And so I do think that it's worse. And I think it's something that, you know, we have to be conscious of as hunters, but people in general that are in the woods, you know, people outdoors, farming, all that.
Right. I know I've shot coons, especially like in the fall time, that have ticks in their ears, ticks all over them. And this may be a stretch, but do you think Ehrlichia or any other tick-borne disease is something that a dog could transmit from another animal just by chewing on it or the blood from another animal?
No, it needs to go into the tick to get transmitted.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, there's primarily, it's primarily the Lone Star tick that we see it get transmitted in the most. And there's something in their digestive tract. I say digestive tract, but in their body, like an enzyme or something. I should know that better of what it is, but it's in their body to basically activate to the next stage of, reproduction. And so then they are able to bite that next animal and transmit it and off it goes again.
Well, what's your recommendation as far as a prevention?
Well, one thing, I mean, for me, I think what I've found work the best for us, I'm a big NexGard fan. The chewable tablets work better than the topicals. The topicals used to work. They don't seem to work anymore. I don't know if it's the ticks are more resistant somehow or if the companies have changed the way that they formulated it. Or, you know, there are a lot of factors, you know, the way people put it on, you know, they might put the topicals on and they get, you know, 75% of it in the hair. Well, it's got to get on the skin and soak in and go out through their pores in order to work. So that's why I'm more on the chewable. And I say the NexGard because, you know, Bravecto, you know, that's the 3 month product that everybody likes to give. And I think it's a good product, but the Lone Star tick particularly, it does not cover for more than 8 weeks. And that's actually on the package. You know, they put it in kind of smaller print, but it is on there. And so if for that one to be effective, you have to give it every 2 months instead of every 3 months, like their selling point. And most people are going to give it every 3 months because, you know, that's what the big selling point is. And so, you know, if you don't get protection for a month at a time, that's huge. That's a long time for Ehrlichia to be transferred. So, like I say, I'm a big NexGard fan. I think Simperica does a really good job as well. Every month one seemed to do a better job.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the Seresto collars?
You know, I am if people know how to put them on. And I didn't know how to put them on in the beginning. And so that's a big deal. If you put them on loose, a lot of people want to put them on just around the hair. They don't work. I mean, they have to be snug enough, I mean, pretty snug against the skin, down under the hair. You got to work it down in there and put it on, and it rubs back and forth on the skin. If you do it that way, then I think it is a good tool to have on deck. Putting them together is probably even better. You know, you could do something like the NexGard and the Seresto collar, and that would be a safe thing to do from what they've told us. And so, you know, that would be one where you're kind of basically doing everything you can do. And they work in different ways. So, you know, I mean, that would be the ideal thing if you could do the both of them when you're exposed like our dogs are.
Right. Okay. Hey guys, next time you're in the market for some new hunting gear, head on over to coonhuntersupply.com and check out the Razor hunting gear line. Razor has partnered up with Yoder Nylon to bring some of the sharpest and best designed briar-proof gear on the market. They have their own line of hunting gear like coats, bibs, chaps, vests, and more. Also, check out the newly released Razor Z1 light. It includes a double walk light, bright double red lights, tight and bright main beam, and a razor sharp green laser. Head on over to coonhuntersupply.com and get yours ordered today. Well, another thing I'd like to talk about is allergies. I know this time of year you got the pollen, you got everything starting to turn green, and I know mine. I've been dealing with allergies the past couple of weeks myself and my dog, and eyes matted up, sneezing, itching. So I'd like to talk a little bit about it.
Well, and allergies, and this is a big topic, and I can talk about a lot of this stuff all day because I do talk about it all day, and it's easy for me to just ramble on about stuff. But, you know, allergies is a big topic in pets in general. I mean, that is one we do see, you know, even the house dogs a lot. And so there's some things that we kind of have to differentiate with our allergies. And so the two basic the two big things that kind of got to distinguish between when you have an allergy is it an environmental allergen like dust, pollen, you know, dander, stuff like that, or are we dealing with a food allergy? And so, you know, that is a big thing to differentiate, because it makes it really tough to treat one type if you're treating the other one. It's certainly possible to have both types. And so we see that commonly, you know, I would say not as commonly as one that's just allergic to environmental allergens. But, you know, kind of going back to PEEP, and I don't know if we talked about this before or we didn't, you know, it's hard to remember what we did or didn't talk about.
We did.
And so, you know, I found out at one point he was allergic to, which I didn't have a problem with him for the longest time. And then he developed an allergy, when he was eating, one food, and I want to say it was a Victor food when it had all kinds of stuff in it. You know, I remember it being a Victor food, and I don't remember what color bag it is, but he started having these ear infections after ear infection. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And he started kind of licking his feet. And I ended up actually going to the vet school, because, you know, we tried everything. We tried cortisone. We tried antihistamines. We tried, you know, bathing with prescription and shampoos. And so we ended up trying an elimination diet. And I'm sure he had eaten deer before. I think the one we went with was like a venison and potato. And bam, he cleared right up. And then I was able to switch him off of that after like 30 days and, you know, to just another commercial dog food. And it ended up being Purina, you know, that's just the one we tried, and at the time, that's what it was. And, you know, it didn't have as many of the ingredients, I guess, that he was allergic to. And so, you know, he was fine from that point on, allergy wise, as long as he was with me. You know, I don't know afterwards if he ever seemed to have them, but that was fine. The other issues, it would be, you know, if we had the seasonal allergies, like we kind of see a flare up about, and then it hits all the dogs about the same weeks, just like it does the people, you know, the big things we can do, you know, we've gotten some new products in addition to, you know, we had like Dex or Depo, before, you know, on your cortisones, and they had the oral stuff like Apoquil, and they came out with that Cytopoint injection, which, you know, keeps them from itching for, you know, up to 8 weeks. And those are all that they all have their place as far as, I'm not going to say curing it, but treating the symptoms of the allergies that we see. The biggest problem that we have is, you know, dogs are down low to the ground. And so if they're allergic to grass or even if they're allergic to, you know, tree pollen, you know, we have tree dogs, so they're going to go to trees. There's going to be pollen flying out, you know, higher concentrations under that. So, you know, there's a lot that we need to try to do to help them out when they're not out in it.
Right.
So.
Right. I know I've been dealing with it the past few weeks, and he gave me a little prednisone just to help. I got super steaks next week, so I'm hoping it'll be better. We've got a lot of rain, and I think we're going to get a little rain next week, so I'm hoping it'll help keep a lot of that pollen washed off. And I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking things. I just know since the pollen's been on, and he's not looking near as good. And I think a lot of the sows are up with kittens right now, too, so that may have a lot to do with it. But I can tell he's went from A to B in the past couple weeks, so...
Well, and I mean, looking, I mean, directly, I mean, we know from sneezing and stuff ourselves, you know, it affects what you can smell. It messes with their head, you know, as far as their ears, you know, they can get irritated in there to the point where, you know, some of them don't want a tree. They're just off, you know, they're really out of whack. So, I mean, that's some things that really, you know, can mess a dog up. I don't know if we're seeing more allergies now. I feel like we're seeing more allergies now than we did, and I don't know if it's because people acknowledge it as that, or, you know, I don't know if it's being passed on down the lines. You know, that's one of the things that we've discussed with a lot of breeders. You know, they sometimes see the allergy issues in one line or another. And is that something that we can kind of correct by breeding it out? I'm not 100% sure of the right answer there.
What do you recommend as far as seasonal goes?
I would say basically the gold standard, you know, for the seasonal type allergy would really be getting allergy testing done. You know, if you get your dog allergy tested, they do have a blood test for it, and you know, it's not the gold standard, but you know, it can help a lot. And they also have the intradermal allergy testing, IDAT, and that is the same way that people get done, where they go in, they shave a patch of hair off the dog, and then they just poke them, you know, with all the different types of grasses and weeds and stuff that's common in that area, and they just read it. It's a dermatologist, a veterinary dermatologist reads it, and they actually make an immunotherapy, allergy shots for dogs. And so, you know, if I had a dog that I really wanted to get back to functioning like they were, I sure would probably put my time and money into one of those, either if it wasn't the IDAT, you know, at least the blood test and give them those shots. It's like, depending on, you know, the schedule, the company will kind of send out a schedule and go over it with your vet, but it's usually like once a week, sometimes twice a week in the beginning, and taper it down to once a week and every couple weeks and out to just like one shot a month. And over time, it desensitizes them to some of those allergens that they deal with. And, you know, I've seen pretty good success. I mean, some pretty impressive turnarounds on some dogs around here.
I'm not very familiar with any of that, but it's definitely worth looking into. What about the, I've heard a lot of people give Zyrtec, Benadryl, just your normal antihistamine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about those are they're the efficacy in them are not as good as they are in people. You know, you might get a dog that responds really well to it, and if you do, that's great. But a lot of them don't respond to them. And all of the studies, that's kind of what they've come up with. No study has found one of the antihistamines to work drastically better than another for the seasonal allergy issues. And even in one animal, you know, they might work great this week, and then next week, for some reason, they just don't work. And then they may work again in 2 weeks. and they haven't come up with any good evidence as to the reason. And so, you know, and the antihistamines have, you know, like Benadryl, it has a place in the dogs for like snake bites, you know. That, you know, that's one of the things. If we get a snake bite, you know, I usually go ahead and, you know, I do an injectable, but I'll say, well, let's go do an injectable Benadryl, and let's do an injection of dexamethasone, and we'll do an antibiotic to prevent infection where the bite is. So, you know, something like that, you know, that's, it has its, they do have their place, but for just our seasonal allergies, it's tough to find one that works for, you know, more than a day or two, if it even works in our dogs.
Yeah. I've had some that I feel like it did. And then I also had one time that I felt like it dried him out so much that he couldn't smell anything.
Right.
I gave it to him right before a hunt, and he'd been clicking, and he didn't get treed on either round that night. So I feel like that had a lot to do with it. I may be wrong, right, but I feel like it did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely could see that, you know, and sometimes, you know, and it's not as bad in dogs like it is in cats, but, you know, some of the antihistamines, even like Benadryl, can make them get kind of hyperactive and even sometimes aggressive. And so, you know, that's some other things that you want to think about, and you're going to go to a hunt if it's something you haven't tried. You know, you might not want to, you know, give a bunch of Benadryl and find out that your dog is one of the ones that gets aggressive when he takes it, you know. So you don't want to get scratched because you popped in some Benadryl trying to help him breathe a little better. So,
right,
you know, that's something else to consider.
Yeah. I feel like I probably overthink more than anything when it comes to these dogs, but I do a lot of studying, well, and a lot of reading. And
you know, I think, and there's another thought to it. You know, I look at the medicine side, you know, and say, you know, well, it might have this wrong or might have that wrong, so, you know, we got to kind of take it easy. But some of the times we really just need to look at our dogs and say, you know, y'all are just doing a shitty job, you know. it's the dog's fault, you know.
Yeah.
And really, that's, you know, it's that, you know, it's just they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So
I tend to forget that they're a dog and not a machine sometimes too. So
yeah, that's it. And I mean, and they have off nights just like people. I mean, you know, they can't say, you know, I really don't feel like going hunting tonight. You know, if you go put them in the box, you know, they're going hunting because they just feel like that's what they're going to do anyway. So, mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I mean, that is definitely another thing to think about is, you know, they have off nights and yeah, they're not perfect. Even the best ones out there, they're not perfect. They do dumb stuff too.
Right. Well, Tripp, I know I've kept you longer than I asked to begin with, so I'll wind her down here. I appreciate you coming on. I said I know I've been chasing you for a few months now, so I'm glad we got this done.
Whenever some things, you know, kind of wind down, you know, I'd be glad to come on and we can talk about all kinds of stuff. I do like to talk. Everybody that knows me knows that I do. I spend a lot of time talking. So, yeah, that'll work. Just, you know, if you come up with some other topics, I'll be glad to talk about them.
All right, man. Well, once again, I appreciate you coming on here, and I appreciate you educating us on a lot of that stuff. So I hope a lot of these listeners can take it and learn from it. So,
all right. Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Well, until next time, once again, thanks, Tripp.
All right, thanks.
Joy Dog Food is one of the oldest dog food companies on the market, starting back in 1945. Since then, much has changed in the pet food industry, but one thing that'll never change is our dedication to our customers and providing the best quality dog food while remaining consistent at the same time. Joy Dog Food is family-owned and operated by Wade Kraskiewicz and his son, Skyler. The two have worked side-by-side for years, providing superior customer service, products, and resources to pet owners across the nation. Here at Joy Dog Food, we pride ourselves on providing personalized one-on-one customer service to each person that calls, emails, or messages us. For more information on our products, to find a dealer near you, or to become a dealer yourself, visit joydogfood.com or call 800-245-4125.